Big ol' Marcus.
Oh, dude.
Big ol' Marcus.
Right here.
Welcome back to the Native Ways Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Ellis.
I'm your co-host, Christian Miller.
And today, we have a special guest. Had to make a little more space to get him in here, but we got him in here.
Had to give me a wide berth.
We'll get into him here in a minute, but Christian's going to go ahead and announce socials. Then we got a pretty cool announcement, too, that we just recently found out.
Yeah, so if you want to go ahead and follow us on our social medias, and also don't forget it's Native Ways Podcast on everything. That's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, groups. So make sure that y'all check us out, subscribe, like, do whatever you can for us, and that helps us out. We'd appreciate it. And then Richard's got an announcement for Dancing Dogs that we're about to get into right now.
Yeah. So, again, you know, like we say every time, we're still working on getting everything going as far as social media, YouTube, all that stuff. You know, work in progress. But we do have some pretty exciting news. From the start, Dancing Dogs has supported us. Matthew over there is a really cool dude. I got to give credit to my buddy Matt Balzinger because he kind of got us in connection. But Matt's doing a pretty cool deal with Dancing Dogs where we now have a promo code. So anybody that's a listener to our show, you get a 15% off discount at any of their merch, Dancing Dogs. The promo code is Native15. We've already posted it on the Facebook. We'll post it on all of our social medias.
All caps.
Yeah, he's got some really sweet stuff. They just dropped a new line. So y'all go check him out. I'm always wearing this cap. I've got shirt. This is called the Brindle Bay. They no longer make this one. But he's got a lot of really cool stuff oriented to all things hunting. He's an avid artifact collector, so he's got things related to that too. And never know, maybe you'll see some collabs coming in the future.
Yeah, so I guess I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest. Garrett, you want to introduce yourself?
Yep, my name's Garrett Glazner. I've known Richard since we were both about 5 years old. I've known Christian since about freshman year of high school. I've done varmint competitions and stuff with Richard for the past, I want to say, 4 to 5 years. It's either 4 or 5. We all work together at the same company, FSR Roofing, and that's really about it.
Shameless plug. Listen. Yeah, Garrett's intro to varmint hunting was an interesting one. We were up at their family lease in Eden, and we were there for spring break, and we were just kind of goofing around calling Fox and stuff, and Garrett's like, you know, I don't know why y'all like that stuff, blah, blah, blah. Me and Andy had been trying to get him into it and stuff, and one morning we were just like, let's go out and let's go kill some fox. And I was like, the whole goal is to get Garrett a fox. We'd already gotten one of our other buddy's girlfriends who really wanted to kill a fox. We got her a fox, which killing fox in Eden is like...
Technically, we got her two foxes.
Yeah.
She split that one in half.
But killing fox in Eden, if you know anything about calling, that's like the honey hole. But, you know, we took Garrett out that morning, and I don't know what you call it, brush. I don't know if it's like buck brush or what, but it's everywhere. And anyway, I just threw the call up in this little bush, and I told Garrett, I was like, hey, sit right here with the shotgun, like no more than 5 foot from the call. Like it couldn't have been any further than that. And I'll let him kind of explain what happened.
We were set up, and I think I either had your shotgun, because I think Emma had the 4570, the lever action. And I'm, you know, just scanning around, and I probably zoned out there a little bit. And next thing I know, I look up, and I'm having a staring contest with a fox that's probably about 5 foot away. And I am not the one that killed it. It actually got killed by the hunter to my right shooting across, and... Yeah, he's never let me live that down, that I basically just had a staring contest with it and didn't had the reaction speed of a snail. Also in that hunt, I don't know if you remember, but it was either when we were walking around or trying to set up, I ended up getting about 1 foot away from that rattlesnake that was under that brush.
Yeah, I almost stepped on a rattlesnake. It was, like I said, it was spring break, so it was March about this time, and snakes were starting to move, and I mean, I was about... standing on top of him, big old rattlesnake.
We're just lucky it was one of the cooler spring breaks because he wasn't trying to get active.
He was trying to get back to his den. But so yeah, Garrett's first intro to this was, I mean, this fox, he says staring contest. This fox almost ran him over. He came barreling down this little game trail, and I mean, he hit the brakes about the time Garrett seen him, and he almost slid in his lap, in all honesty. And then he turned and ran, and JD, our other buddy, like I said, we, you know, this was like spur of the moment. Let's go call some stuff. JD made the most incredible shot I've ever seen. Open sights 45-70, not a fox gun, but I tell you what, it does kill a fox. Open sights this fox running, you know, full blast about 30 yards. It was total luck shot. But anyway, that was Garrett's intro to calling. And I don't know, I guess you like it now or what?
Yeah, I ended up liking it. It's, I mean, any time where you can get out there and you can have fun with some buddies and, you know, get rid of some problems for whether it's landowners or ranchers or anything along those lines, it kind of is just a double whammy at that point where you're taking care of a problem, but you're also enjoying a hobby while you're doing it.
Yeah. But that being said, let's kind of get into the topic today. Today we're going to talk about a recent tournament, just like, you know, last episode with Canyon. We're right in the middle of tournament season. We're trying to get through it. And then, as always, bring y'all some Arrowhead content. I know a lot of people are itching to hear about the points, but we got plenty of that coming. So a couple weeks back, we teamed up with my buddy Cole Taylor. A lot of y'all that dig know Cole very well. We planned to hunt a tournament up in Athens. It was a benefit hunt for a little girl that passed away, I think, last year. This is a second annual hunt, so it's pretty cool event. The money generated, I think it goes to her foundation, something like that. Anyway, pretty interesting hunt. Stringer format. So when we say stringer, that means you got to have, no, sorry, it was points.
It's points. Right?
Yeah, not stringer. Points. So you got to kill, I think fox. Fox were always the lowest. Coyotes are second most points, and then cats are the most. Yep. So we kind of had a game plan to hunt some stuff here and hunt some stuff there, and had, you know, target species at each location. But we'll get into that and talk about it a little more, talk about our setups and all that. Christian, you kind of run down the plan we had?
Yeah, so, I mean, originally the format for the – I want to say it was coons were 10 points and fox were 25, coyotes were 50, cats were 100, so – really, we knew that in that area where we were hunting out of, there wasn't many fox. So really what we were going to try to do is hit a fox pretty hard here, try to rack up some. And during the daytime when they're, you know, it's a little bit easier to call fox anytime.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're like, we're going to have better luck calling fox in the daytime anyways. We might as well just burn up some stuff here, try to kill some fox, and then we'll make our way up there around dark. And then try to get on some coyotes and cats. So that's exactly what we did. We ended up hunting around here. Well, I won't talk about everything, I guess, right now. But that was the plan, and that's what we did. But it all worked out. I mean, we'll kind of get into what we actually ended up with and what we did and kind of how the hunt was and all that good stuff. But really, it was a good cause, and I was glad that we were all able to be a part of it and kind of see. Very emotional. You know, in a lot of these weigh-ins that you go to and stuff, it's kind of just everyone's kind of a little tense just because they want, you know, everybody wants to win. But this one is like, it really didn't even matter if you won or not. Just the people that were there were so supportive. And it was almost just like everybody was getting together for like a family barbecue kind of deal. That's how it felt to me. So it was really cool to be a part of that. Something different where everybody's kind of getting together and being more of a community. Kind of like we always talk about what we like to do is not really talk bad about each other and stuff like that. We kind of all come together. So that was really a nice eye-opening moment. And because I would say that, you know, when it comes to predator hunting, our contest calling or anything like that, it's pretty competitive for the most part. It's almost like bass fishing. If you've ever bass fished to tournaments or something like that, you know, it's a lot of smack talk and, you know, a lot of luck and some skill, obviously, but yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, that's what we did, and we ended up doing pretty good.
Yeah,
I think on top of it being a good cause, the thing that made that one different, at least for me, was we've gone to a bunch of them, and there's always been the prize at first, second, or third, and it's always been that if you don't have the weight that you're targeting when you're about halfway through, or you get to that early morning light, and you don't have a cat, especially in like a points tournament, maybe you're not going to go to weigh in. But with the way that they ran it and the way they operated it, they made sure that anybody who showed up got a raffle ticket, they got everybody.
Yeah.
They got everybody involved. It made everybody want to show up. It wasn't just, hey, if you think you're in the money, show up. It was, hey, this is a great cause, show up, and, you know, maybe you walk away with stuff. And there were people who definitely didn't have, I mean, there was one guy, I'm pretty sure, had one fox that showed in to weigh in, and I think he took home a suppressor or something along those lines. So, yeah. And I really wish more tournaments did that, to where they got everybody involved and, you know, wanted everybody to show up, because I feel like there's a lot of them. There's a lot of good competition that gets lost in just the fact that people are like, oh, it's not worth my time.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people miss out. I mean, I know of people that, you know, oh, I don't have the weight or whatever, and then they don't go to weigh-in, and they had the weight.
Yep.
But this deal, the tournament is Camouflage Blessings. The family that lost the little girl, them and one of their family friends put it on. I think it had 45 or 50 teams. It was It was a good turnout, and I think just about every team showed up to weigh-in. Like Christian said, you know, it wasn't a tense interaction. You know, you go to these weigh-ins, and just like he said, everybody's competitive, and, you know, we want to win too, and, you know, we're nervous about winning, whatever. But this one, everybody, you know, kind of joking around, and then the door prizes and stuff like that gives you a reason to come. And then on top of that, a good cause. They had raffles going on while they were there, so you could buy into the raffles. One guy bought like $100 worth of tickets just standing right there before they did the raffle. And all that goes back to, I believe, like I said, I believe it's a foundation, but I don't want to lie to y'all.
Mm-hmm.
They do have another tournament coming up. It's either end of March or April. It's a pig tournament, but I'd suggest y'all look into it, you know, if y'all are looking for a good tournament to get into.
Yeah. And I mean, they did have a lot of pigs at weigh-in.
Yeah, they did.
Which that was a side pot, too. I didn't mention this big pig. Yep. Side pots are big pig, big coyote, big cat, I believe.
Yep. Yep.
And then, a lot of people brought in pigs.
Yeah, just about. I think we're one of the few teams that didn't have a pig, but we could've. Didn't try to kill any pigs.
Yeah, could have, but we didn't.
Yeah, but they'll be running that tournament again next year. I mean, it's going to be an annual tournament, especially if they keep having the turnout like that. And they're talking about doing youth hunts and things like that, donations for the kids with similar conditions and stuff like that. So definitely look into it. They've got a Facebook page, and they're always doing stuff. Really good cause. But yeah, we'll get into it. So we'll start with gear. This year we've been putting a lot of effort into our high rack. And like we've talked in the past, the high rack's made a huge increase in the productivity we've had, just like with the efficiency of killing things. We've never had a problem calling things in, but being able to actually effectively dispatch the animals has been a little bit different. You know, shooting from tripods or shooting from the ground, especially running lights, it makes it a little harder. And like I've talked the past few episodes too, we've kind of found what I think is like the perfect mixture of light, thermal this year. But we put a ton of time into the rack. We didn't really make any like crazy improvements between tournaments from Hamilton to that one. I think we added, what did we add before then? Did we add anything? Did we add the ladder?
No, that was already done. So, I mean, I think the only thing we had was, I don't know. I don't think we really did anything different on that one.
All right. I'm an idiot. Sorry. We didn't add anything to the rack this go round. It's the next tournament that we added to. But, and that's the thing. We do so much of this, we're kind of getting mixed up. But so we'll talk the gear. Nothing changed on my end. You know, I'm running the same 22-250, and I don't even think I got on the gun this tournament. I did at one point, but then I took myself off just because I was, you know, guys were shooting good and stuff, and there's no need for me to interrupt that. But running the same call, running the same sequences and all that stuff, and it was working. And we found kind of like a golden ticket for that weekend. And that's how it goes, you know, when you're calling, it's just like fishing. Like, you got all these different lures, and it just takes that one, boom. It's just like white bass or largemouth, you know. One day whites might be hitting sassy shads that are chartreuse. The next day it might be a white curly-tailed grub. Mm-hmm. Same thing with calling, you know, one sound one day might work, one sound the next day might work, one sequence might work, and we kind of found that perfect formula. But yeah,
and that's the thing, you can't be bashful trying to do new things. If you've had something, you know, work for you in the past, it may not work that time, and, you know, that kind of helped us in this go-around. Tried something new that we would never have tried before, and it ended up working. Not that it's going to work every single time, but, you know, like I said, if you're calling, you got all these different sounds on your list. I mean, might as well try them, see it, especially if you have time to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's always cool to see something come in on something that you've never done.
Yeah.
Like different sequence or different sound.
You have to have an understanding of what each sound is meant to do and all that.
Yeah.
You know, just like a lure. I mean, it's literally a verbal lure.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. But you gotta know what it's meant to do. So, it's like, if you're using a deep diving crankbait in a creek, you're probably not going to have great success. So, if you're howling vocals for fox, you're probably not going to do too great. You might call a fox up, but probably not, because coyotes are going to kill a fox. So, I'm thinking your odds aren't going to be too great in that one. But you got to know what each sound does, and then at least have an idea of how to approach it. But so nothing really changed on my setup, you know, aside from my sequence. Christian, you want to talk about your gear?
I think everything actually switched up a little bit. As far as the rifle, my main rifle, still the same. Still a 243 regular American. Gun. Yeah, I did run a pellet gun. Actually, I had four.
Nope.
I had four guns on this go-around. I had a pellet gun. That was just for, like, really close stands. And then
target practicing.
Yeah.
And then I ran a 300 blackout suppressed. That was for some of our closer fox stands, just to try to, you know, if one came in pretty early, hope it would make enough noise to where we can get another one in, stuff like that. It doesn't always matter on fox, but we were trying to rack up as many as we could, as fast as we could. So every little bit helps. Anyways, I ran that, and then we were mainly running a lot of shotguns too.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our fox stands were pretty close. So I was running my 870 with the... Who makes that? Is it Carlson's?
Yeah, Carlson's.
Yeah, it's a Carlson's coyote choke. And pistol grip. It's kind of set up like a turkey gun pump. And it did pretty good.
Yeah.
So really, that was kind of the only thing I switched up on my end. As far as guns and equipment, everything else was the same.
Garrett, I run mine a little bit different than everybody else. I've always kind of had the mindset
that
the bigger the bullet, the better, because it, you know, growing up, deer hunting, oddad, stuff like that, you wanted a big bullet, you aim for the center mass of the chest, and there's no question of it. As long as you hit in the general area, you're okay. And so I've kind of wanted to bring that over to varmint hunting, which is great for points tournament, because...
Perfect.
I mean, if it's down, it's counted. Not so much for a weight tournament, where we have to, you know, save those ounces. So I run a Ruger American in a 6.5 Creedmoor. I've got a Silencer Co. Omega, and then I run a Ricoh Hybrid Thermal. From all the ones that I've ran, I think the 6.5 Creed is the one I've liked the most. It's the one I'm most comfortable with, and it's the one that, I mean, I don't think I've hit center mass yet besides one one little coon that got away. But
the coon that got
other
away.
Than that, if the bullet's making contact, then we're going to find that animal.
Garrett makes it sound like he's a bad shot. He's not that bad.
No, I'm not a bad shot. I'm good at...
He's really good at shooting fences, though.
Well, yeah, that was a fun one. And we only... Yeah, that's a story for another time. But yeah, it's just simple. Bigger bullet, better results.
I agree. In a points tournament, I mean, I've talked about running my freaking 6.8 Western just for the hell of it. But yeah, I mean, points, you know, you don't really got to worry about that weight. This tournament did, like Christian said earlier, it had side pots for heavy cat, heavy coyote, and heavy pig. So, you know, there was a little bit of need for it, you know, not just blowing them in half. But
I mean, was there, though? Because the one, never mind, that's telling the results. But we'll get to that, where it didn't really make a difference.
Well, in one instance, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we weren't shooting fox with a 6.5 or nothing, which we do sometimes. It just depends where we're at. But whatever. But, yeah, so I guess let's kind of talk about the day. You know, we used Onyx to kind of map everything out around here, because we've gotten so much property this year between, you know, again, our team kind of rotates just depending on who can be where, when, why, how, whatever. Garrett's not going to hunt all season with us because he's got prior obligations. Some weekends I've got obligations. Some weekends Christian's does. Some weekends Canyon does. You know, whatever. So people rotate around. But with all that land, using Onyx has been a game changer this year, I think, being able to find property owners, find where we want to make stand locations, look at past wind directions, things like that, and know how we need to go into a property and approach a stand and you know, trying to maximize our success, looking at topographical features, where should be holding coyotes, where should be holding fox, all that stuff. A lot goes into it that you don't think of until you really start doing it heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And Onyx, I would contribute a lot of our success this year to Onyx too.
Yeah.
And it's not like we're not going out and just, you know, slaying them like some of these guys do, but we're doing pretty good for just some average Joes, I would say. Anyway, use Onyx, kind of line up the properties, and Garrett got a hold of some new stuff, and I'll kind of let him talk about, you know, his stuff. Like I said, started out hunting fox around Central Texas, like, you know, Killeen, Belton, Salado, just around those areas.
So, I mean, as far as hunting goes, this is the first year where I've actually actively tried to find us more land. It's true. There's no denying that part.
Team player.
Yeah, I know. So I've always provided whatever deer lease I was on at that point, and we'd go out there, and usually up until about 2 years ago, it was in a great location, either Eden or Richland Springs. Both of those were great fox locations. But it wasn't until this year where, you know, Richard kind of pushed me, and he was like, just make some phone calls. I mean, you know enough people to just make some phone calls, and started Garrett, and we got our first yes, and I was like, oh, this is fun.
Garrett and Garrett's family know like 7 counties worth of people, so which a county in Texas is a ton of people.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd be going through Onyx, definitely not during work hours, and just going through and, oh, yeah, I know that last name. Let me talk to my grandpa and see if he can, you know, reach out because he went to high school with him or he rodeoed with him or something along those lines. And some of them were fruitful. Some of them were not. A lot of them had – they were already leased out. I mean, we missed out on one that was, I think, 500 acres of dense – what was – I forgot her name. But, yeah, she had it leased out. But we ended up getting 2 or 3 more properties, I think, this year. One of them was a bust, and that one was actually a funny story because, I mean, on Onyx, it was set up perfect. It had that pond in that large pond in the middle. It was covered up, and we went out there, and the person who I'd gotten permission, her father-in-law lived on the property, and he came out, wasn't expecting him to be there, and he comes out and says, well, you're not going to have any luck. And I said, well, okay, we've heard that before. We're going to try it out. And he said, well, I mean, those hunters 2 nights ago, they did great. And I was like, oh, I wasn't told about that. And sure enough, I mean, we went through this property that should have had them coming in left and right, and nothing but silence.
Yeah. Yeah, and finding fox around the stuff that we hunt is pretty fruitful. And we've learned, you know, topographical features that fox kind of prefer. So this place, I mean, it's set up ideally for fox. And I've known the father-in-law, actually, the guy that owns the place, I've known him a long time. He's known my dad since my dad was a kid. And honestly, thought he'd passed away. And
oh, he's still kicking.
He's still kicking, and he's still pretty ornery.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we went in there. No luck on that one. But we started out pretty hot. We went to a place Garrett had picked up, a place we've done work for in the past, stuff like that. And really prime location for fox. And Garrett doesn't believe in shotguns at this point.
No, I don't.
So he was running, I think you were running Christian's 300.
Yep, I was running his 300, and we were set up around that big brush, and we were supposed to have Cole with us, but he'd had vehicle problems. And, you know, it's just our luck that the first fox that comes in from the one direction that we would have had covered if we had a fourth.
But so, yeah, we had a fox come steaming down this hill, and we're all just tucked around a big cedar bush. And, you know, we had pretty much every angle except the backside covered, which the backside is a hill with more cedars right to us. So not expecting him to come from there. I guess if we'd have set more in the middle of this kind of flat, he would have come out and we could have shot him. But anyway, he come hauling in. Don't get a shot on him. Is what it is. So first stand, call fox, nothing. Next stand, we go and call one about 10 foot from us. Shotgun it, and we're on the board. So off to a good start. Fox were capped at 5, and coons were capped at 5. So you could only have 5 of each. And what we were thinking is, because the way it worked out, the fox equated to, like, if you maxed on your fox, it was like 3 coyotes or 2.5 coyotes.
Yeah.
So we knew, like, we're going to country where there's not many fox, and we've got fox. Let's capitalize, and we'll be up 2.5 or 3 coyotes on everyone already. So that was the game plan, was to get those by dark and then go up there. But so we hit that place. We got that first fox knocked out. And then from there, we kicked over. That's when we went to... Where did we go from there? Is that when we went to that dude's place that we just talked about?
Yep. Yep. We cut over from there, and that was not fruitful. And then we went to the guy I met at the city hall, and that wasn't...
Yeah, that one wasn't good either.
And yeah, those were both frustrating.
Yeah. And then we went to a little spot that we've got access to. We've had access to it for a while, and making a stand. And we were running a fox set, and it kind of run through the allotted time that I kind of give fox to come in. And I switch it to coon fight. And I was like, maybe we can kill a coon right here, kind of close to a creek. And here comes this big, pretty fox up out of the bottom. Right in, and Christian shotgunned him at, like, I don't know, 15, 20 yards. Not, I mean, chip shots, you know, nice stuff. So now we got two, feeling good. It was only like 4 o'clock, I think, right?
Yep.
And then from there, we putted around a few places, made some blank stands, and then right before we kind of were going to leave to go to Corsicana, we made one last stand at the spot, and... I'll take the blame on this one. I moved Garrett. He had set up in a spot. And I was like, I don't think this is the best spot for you to sit. So I moved him. I took the backside. And basically where I set Garrett was right in line with the call. And
part of it comes down to location on that one. But part of it, again, is back to the hatred of shotguns where I don't know how far I was, but I do not know the effective range of a shotgun, but I knew we were making eye contact, so it was either attempt it right there or he was going to be gone. And so we did it, and I did it, and he ran off. And you know, it's just my luck that in the same exact spot, here comes the second one and stops in the same exact spot, stares at me the same way, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try to, you know, 1-for-2 this, and we ended up 0-for-2-ing it. So that was that was a good conclusion to trying to get fox.
Yeah, but I mean, we got two, so we knew we were sitting, you know, at least a coyote up on everybody with that, maybe. Not really. Mm-hmm. But so we kind of regrouped. We're like, hey, you know, let's get a hold of Cole, figure out what's going on with him. We'd already talked with Cole and just decided that we were going to come up and meet him about dark, since he was having issues with his vehicle. And so we regrouped, got everything kind of ready to go up there, grab some food, and we headed north. And Christian, you want to kind of lead into that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the first stand we made out there.
First stand was kind of, in my opinion, and it wasn't the most eventful stand.
No,
as
that's
far
the,
as,
that's Garrett's story.
Yeah, Garrett gets to tell this one, I guess. It wasn't the most eventful stand as far as, like, yeah, you know, just something badass happened as far as, like, the way they came in. Calm down. But
that's to say,
definitely, 5%. Definitely the most eventful animal that I've called in and killed. But yeah, go ahead, Garrett. Kind of walk him over the stand setup, walk him over what happened.
So we pulled in. It was well past dark, so all I could see from the setup, I didn't know where we were for, like, if it was an open field or anything along those lines until we started scanning. But I always like to start on the ground. I run the thermal on the ground. They run the lights from up on the stand. I feel like that gives... Richard always made the good point that catches a few more eyes, but it's always good to have someone on the ground so you can scan underneath the trees, which came in handy on that stand.
Yep.
But actually, Cole was the first one to catch the image up on the rack. He called across because I was scanning behind us, and I turn, see him, and I mean, he's over across the pond, but he is showing no interest in the call whatsoever. Just
at first.
Well, at first, yeah. Walking back and forth, and then you switch sounds. I don't know what you switched to. I don't know if you even recall what you switched to.
No, I know what I switched to.
But just all of a sudden...
Real quick. So what we were calling, it was a pretty bright moon that night. Mm-hmm. But we were calling, like, we were driving down this county road, and Cole's like, hey, I'm going to make a phone call real quick and see if we can call this spot right here. He's like, I get to duck hunt it sometimes, so let me call him. He calls the guy. The guy's like, oh, yeah, go on in there. We pull in. I mean, like, second he gets off the phone, we're pulling up to the gate, basically. Mm-hmm. Pull in, and it's two big tanks and then a little feeder creek that goes into the tanks. We parked on the backside of the dam to the tank, kind of, and we're calling down this feeder down toward a big thicket that was across a road. So we're trying to pull out of this draw, basically, from this thicket. And Cole spots him. He's coming in. Garrett, he was not just super... he wasn't super hard charging or nothing. He's coming in. He's responding to the call, but he's working slow. Not very, very into it just yet. Anyway, it was like, I think it was like 7 or 8 minutes in, and he's probably closing in about 300 yards that we can see on thermal. We got a lot of short mesquites blocking the lights, so we can't cut across this drainage to see him. But Cole can see him on thermal. Garrett can see him on thermal, so we know what he's doing. You know, they're relaying information to me. Hey, what's he doing? Making adjustments on the call, whatever. Anyway, I'd been running rabbit distress, and I switched to Lucky Pecker, and boom.
Gone. And, yeah, he switched it and started booking it. He went down. From my vantage point, I lost him for just a minute. He went down in the little dip, and Cole still had eyes on him, but he couldn't make a shot because it was through the trees, and he popped back up, stopped for just a second, and shot him, and that was kind of the end of that. So we, you know, get down, we start walking over to him because he's still moving, so we're worried he's going to get away, and he's now rolled down into that part where I can't get another shot on him from where I'm at. So Richard hops down, we go over to him, and we're getting closer, and Richard looks at me, he's like, I think that thing's mangy as all get out, because it is, it's blending in with the sky, it's so dark. And we get closer and closer and closer, and we can finally get full light on it, and it's a black coyote. And yeah. I didn't in that moment realize how rare that was, and he starts telling me good job on that one and everything like that. And yeah, I didn't realize how rare that was, honestly, until I didn't get to enjoy the moment fully until probably about 30 minutes later when I started looking it up and
did not
know the statistics on a black coyote.
Yeah, they're a lot more common in eastern states. And, you know, there's multiple color phases to coyotes if you don't know. A lot of people will see a colored up coyote and be like, oh, it's a coy dog, oh, this and that. And I even had people comment, oh, that's a mix, blah, blah, blah. No, it's 100% coyote. I mean, okay, I say 100% coyote. He might have some mix in him somewhere, but he's a coyote, 100%. And anyway... Yeah, like Garrett said, you know, I hit the light on him. I'm like, man, that sucker nasty looking. Like, he's mangy. And we're getting closer and closer, and I see a lot of hair. Like, he's furred up pretty good. I'm like, Garrett, he's not as mangy as I thought. I think he's just kind of dark. And we keep getting closer. I'm like, Garrett, I think he's black. And Garrett's like, oh, cool. I'm like, what the hell you mean cool? That's a pretty rare freaking thing.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what that is. I don't know what how many people kill black coyotes in Texas. I mean, I know it happens. I know some guys that killed one last year, but it's just not a super common thing. That area, I know they have a few more of them. Like I said, the further east you go, the more you get. But it was really awesome moment. It would have been a lot cooler if he'd have done something cool or made the stand a little more memorable as far as his action coming in.
Yep.
But pretty freaking awesome. But so then. From there, we went over to, is that when we kicked over and killed the first cat, or did we, I think we putted around for a little bit.
We made several stands between that and that first cat because it was
pretty dry.
We had a little bit of a dry spell and we were all getting a little bit tired and we made that.
It was from like 9 to 2. We didn't call anything.
It was something.
The wind was also ripping like bad. And you know, wind can be really good for you or it can be really bad for you. And it seems to me like there's definitely a sweet spot in it. I mean, we've had luck calling coyotes in higher wind this year, for sure, and had a lot of luck calling cats in higher wind.
Yeah.
But
just we've been where they are.
Yeah, you can kind of cinch down and locate them a little easier. But we kicked over to a place that we hadn't called with Cole before. And it's a big, wide-open cattle pasture with a little thicket on it. And really no water around it or anything, I don't think. There might have been a tank like a mile, three-quarters of a mile from it. Pretty good ways, though.
I don't honestly know. I didn't look at it on Onyx. So it's kind of one of those we weren't expecting to call that in anyways.
Yeah. But go ahead and tell them about it.
Yeah, so We started off, I think, with some prey distress, kind of just seeing what was going on. And then I think it was after the first prey distress sound, we played some howls or some vocals.
I opened with vocals.
Yeah, we played some vocals and stuff like that, and didn't really have anything, so we switched to prey later in the stand, and then, you know, sure enough, we caught eyes, like, way out in the distance. So we're just sitting there kind of trying to figure out what it is, just charging in hard. So we're thinking immediately it's kind of a coyote,
yeah,
the way it was bouncing its eyes and stuff. But they're looking on the thermal, they're like, I think it's a cat. And I'm like, dude, there's no way that's a cat the way it's running.
Both. Yeah.
I mean, it's hauling. Fastest I've ever seen one run, like full speed. And sure enough, we get it, gets close enough, gets to the edge of the fence. And, you know, still we still have access to the other side of the fence, so we can shoot over the fence or on the other side where we're on. Well, it gets to the fence. It's pretty much looking sideways. It's about to jump over the fence, and that's right about when we kind of smooched and stopped her and ended up laying her over, put two in her. Well, me and Cole both shot at the same time, so it was actually kind of a cool little deal. Walked over, and, you know, sure enough, it was a cat, obviously. And that kind of put us on the board, kind of put a little more spunk in us.
Yeah.
We were ready to rock and roll after that because, you know, 100 points right there. We're like, we're back in it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, anytime, you know, you kill... The plan was we'd kill a couple cats and kill a few coyotes while we were up there. And anytime you can kill a couple cats in a points tournament, you're going to compete. Unless you're somewhere that somebody's going to shoot 16 coyotes or something, which we weren't going to do that. And let's say that black coyote had come in like this cat did. Oh, man, it would have been a whole different memorable experience, more memorable experience. But we caught eyes on that cat. I mean, I would say at least 500 yards out, probably more, because they couldn't tell what it was on the thermal. It was so far out. Yeah. And with our lights, you can ID pretty good about 200 yards, I would say, 250.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him a minute to come in, like, and he was hauling. He did not slow down one. He did not miss a step. Like they said, fastest I've ever seen a cat come in and come all the way in. That fence was about 80 yards.
In the wide open.
Yeah, wide open. Like
there's trees where he came from, but from the trees to where we shot him, no trees.
Yeah. And normally those cats will work through the brush lines, too. Mm-hmm. You know, people that know about calling or do it, those cats, they're hard to spot because they work through the brush and they use the brush to their advantage to sneak up. And there was no sneak in this sucker.
No, he came in because I remember we were looking down that alley of trees, or at least there was that one row. And so I saw where he was coming down that tree line. So I moved over to right at the end of that tree line because I figured right when he got to the opening, he'd just sit down and stop. And he makes it to that corner and then books it out into the middle of the field. It just wasn't anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. That was the hardest I'd ever seen a cat come in. And literally, like, we shoot the cat, we're all pretty hyped up, pick it up, and we're talking about it. I'm like, guys, that's probably the coolest cat stand I've ever had. Like, first, not expecting to call a cat there. Like, it was 100% supposed to be a coyote stand. Which, dumb luck happens, you know, things happen. But, like, definitely a coyote stand. This is the coolest cat stand I've ever made. Coolest cat sequence I've ever seen, you know, whatever. Just talking about it on the way to the next stand, all hyped up. Pull in to a very similar spot. Really open pasture. There's a thicket behind us, probably a couple hundred yards. Looking down in this draw. This one actually had water. So this makes sense to be holding cats a little more. It's got a big tank and a little thicket off the drainage of that tank about, I don't know, 60 yards from us.
Mm-hmm.
And then a fence line that splits the pasture. And then way out across the field, I mean, you're talking 1,000, 1,200 yards is the next thicket. And we set up, same sequence. And, you know, right when I hit shelter belt, we catch eyes about probably 400 yards.
Probably say.
And Christian spotted him first. And what we like to do, like I said, we run a mix of thermal and lights. I run a Scan Pro. Christian has a, I don't remember what the wicked light is, but it's a kill light, basically, that mounts on his gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a Scan Pro. So he's scanning from the table. I'm scanning standing up. Cole's scanning on his gun. And Garrett's on the ground scanning at the front of the pickup and covering the backside. So we got everything covered, lights and thermal. Christian picks him up first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess kind of tell him.
Yeah, I mean, this one was kind of the same deal almost. It wasn't as quick, but it still definitely was interested the whole time. So between us and the cat, there was a big tree and some, I think, some cedar saplings below it. And then between us and where she was heading was another tree. And that little thicket kind of, and that wasn't but, what, 50 yards off the truck, what yeah. Richard was talking about. So I'm like, all right, just, at that point, I turn my light off. I get on the gun. Richard's on the eyes, so I'm watching the whole time. She's coming in. She kind of slows down when she gets to that tree, kind of pops around it, and then it keeps coming. I'm like, dude, yeah, she's not. She didn't stop and try to, like, you know, check up or anything right where that tree is. And I expected her pretty much to get to that tree
and stop.
Check up, and then probably slink away and disappear behind that in that that bottom over there. Well, no, she didn't do that. She kept coming, and I thought we were about to lose her behind this other brush. I'm like, dude, I lost her eyes. I don't know where she's at, and we're scanning. And she pops up right behind this. There's a cut oak tree that was been dead for a long time, so it's just a stump sitting there. And she slinks behind that stump, kind of pokes her head around that stump right, you know, 50 yards from the truck. And right when she did that, we both put two in her. Like, me and Cole did the same thing again. We shot same time, dropped her, and we were freaking pumped. Like, that was crazy again. 400, 500, however many yards she was out there. Could have been 600.
Yeah, another.
Coming in all the way and then not holding up behind that brush. You know, it's not that she wasn't smart. She was just really interested in what we were doing. Like, she 100% wanted every bit of what we were giving her.
Yeah.
And she got it for sure. And then the next one, Garrett can tell you about.
Well, before we transition, so just like Garrett said, or just like Christian said, you know, that tree was on the back side of that tank. That first tree was on the back side of that tank that she made it to. So it was about 200 yards. And that's when we knew, you know, she hit that, and we could clearly tell she was a cat. Mm-hmm. And just like Christian said, you know, when I'm calling cats, I'm expecting them to find the drainage, find the brush, take the path where they're least visible. And because they're ambush predators, they're going to sneak up and work in slow, do whatever. Well, here she comes on a string. And, yeah. You know, she hit that tree, and I'm thinking she's going to stop, and I'm already telling Christian, you know,
yeah,
if she stops, let's shoot her right there.
Yeah, that's what makes it the most intense with cats. That's why it's kind of one of my favorites, because it's just a adrenaline rush when a cat comes in, because you really don't know what they're going to do. Like, you have an idea of exactly what they're going to do. They're going to find some brush. They're going to sit on the edge of it, get behind a tree, get in some brush, slink down, lay down, whatever, and kind of just keep something between you and them, almost like squirrels.
Yeah.
They're always going to kind of peek around. If they see you move and they can see you, they're going to keep something between them. So when you're seeing a cat work in and you see something between them and you, you're always like pissing your pants.
Yeah.
Because you're not knowing what's going to happen. And my heart was beating fast, and I was, dude, that was probably one of the most crazy ones. I mean, besides the other one too.
Yeah, which we're about to get into.
So that second stand that we made, we were in that same field, hadn't moved any, just probably about 4 or 5 minutes later, I'd probably say. And like you had mentioned before, the edge of that tree line was probably 1,000, 1,100 yards. See cows back there. And me and Cole picked up something moving, and based on kind of the size that we were seeing of, you know, at that point, it's a blob. You're not seeing any definition or anything along those lines. But based on kind of the size, we were like, oh, that's probably coyote coming in or something along those lines. And I mean, just like the two before it, I mean, that female that Christian shot, the second one, was a little bit smarter than the other ones, but like just on a line, dead center. And we probably got to 600, 700 yards before me and Cole both pretty much about the same time. We're like that. We're like 95% certain that's another cat that's coming in.
Yeah.
And he kept coming in. I think he stopped and hesitated maybe once, and then
I don't remember him slowing down much. I mean, I picked his eyes up about the time
he slowed down pretty much right when he got to about almost where we shot him.
Yeah, Cole, he was working in, and Cole's like, I'm pretty sure it's a cat. He's like, I'm like 80-85% sure. And I'm like, ah, dude, there's no way. And about that time, I catch eyes on him, and just like the first two, man, he's just hauling. And again, same stand as the last cat we shot, and not far after, he's hauling in, and, you know, eyes are kind of bouncing, and I'm like, maybe it's a cat. Mm-hmm. And closer he gets, Garrett down on the ground. He turns around, looks at us. Dude, I think that's a cat.
Yeah.
And Garrett's thermal is slightly better than Cole's. And, you know, you can make out some pretty good definition with his. And he gets close enough, and Garrett's like, that's a cat. And Garrett's not this. Garrett's never killed a cat before. He's seen us kill quite a few cats now. But he's never been on the trigger pulling end of it. So,
well, that's kind of the preface of what comes next is, you know, we had had conversations before we made that first stand where we killed that first cat. And we were talking about, you know, I'd never shot a cat or anything along those lines. And with the hunts that I've been on with y'all, one, two cats called in is a good night. Mm-hmm. I mean, and to see not only one come in and get double tapped, but a second one to come in and get double tapped, and I haven't had the chance to pull the trigger, my heart's beating. Because not only do I know this thing is big comparative to the other two, but I'm the only guy with a gun that night who hadn't dropped one yet. So I was like, okay, yep, this is it.
Well, Andy's working from your side, too. So more than likely, you're going to get the shot on him.
Tracking him across, and I think he finally stopped maybe 60 yards away.
Yeah, and mind you, we're in a big white truck. Okay? Now, the way we have the truck set up and the way we've got lights and stuff on the rack, it's pretty much blinded. But he's coming in from kind of the one weak point with our light, and Garrett's standing on the ground in front of the truck, and he's, you know, he's 60 yards from Garrett on the ground.
Yep.
And cats aren't stupid.
No, they're not. But I definitely was tracking him along, and then I got a little bit, on that bog pod, I got hit it where I went a little bit ahead of him, and so I started to track back, and right when he stopped, I probably was a little bit happy with when I pulled the trigger, but I pulled the trigger, and instead of hitting him center mass, I hit him right there a little bit below, and I've got a video I've got to send them, and I'm sure they'll either tag it to this or make a separate video of it, but I mean, it gave that cat a tummy tuck. But, yeah, so watched it, knew it was down just based on, I mean, the amount of blood loss in that first 15 seconds.
It's insane.
There was no question. I mean, Richard, you know, with not having the thermal up there, Richard's biggest concern when we pull the trigger is we've had so many animals get shot, whether it was square or anywhere along those lines, and, oh, yeah, they're down. And then they get up and walk away. So
they're all extremely tough animals. I mean, even a fox, you know, I've been with multiple people that'll shoot a fox with a 223. Oh, he's down. And I can see him down there moving. To me, I'd rather shoot him twice and know they're not going anywhere, especially at this point to where we're at with this stuff. I want to make sure they're dead and I want to make sure they're in the truck. A, I don't want to have the animal suffer.
Yeah.
And B, you know, they all add up and they add up quick. Mm-hmm. So every one you lose, that hurts. So this year I've been very big on if they're down and if they're moving, shoot them again. So anyway, sorry.
No, you're good. Just to make sure. And so like that's always his biggest concern. And I'm pretty sure that's probably Christian can confirm. This is about the first thing he says on every single one is it, you know, is it down? Is it moving? Is it anything along those lines, especially on the nightstands? So that's what we're watching for. And this was the first animal that. Not the first animal that night, because obviously the two that got double tapped, they weren't moving either. But that it was, I mean, it probably ran about 25, 30 yards, jumped a fence, and then it was down, and we knew that was kind of it. And one of the parts that obviously I can't repeat what was said, but I got very excited when this happened. And so Richard, he likes to do a lot of recording, and he doesn't always tell you when he's recording. So I jump the fence, I go to get him, and I'm excited, and I definitely had some words with this cat just out of pure excitement, and it was definitely not my most mature moment, but I mean it ended up, we had that stand, we resulted in two cats killed, which is awesome in and of itself. But not only that, the way that they came in, and then I think that second one ended up weighing, even with the tummy tuck, like, I don't remember the weight. What was the weight?
It was like 21-something.
Yeah, he was a big cat. If he had his guts in him,
Well, and that for that area.
Yeah, I mean, that there's not very many big cats.
They got a bunch, there. But
yeah,
they don't have a good amount just because there's too many.
Yeah. There's, I mean, you
competition.
You start getting to our area and a little west of us, you start getting into some bigger cats. Even around here, you know, if you shoot a 24 or 26, that's a big cat. Which this cat, guts and all, and, you know, if he hadn't lost 7 gallons of blood, which y'all should have seen in the video that we attached.
Yeah, the video's going to be posted right here.
It's already been posted, Garrett. But if you've, you know, if he had all his inners in him still, he would have probably been a 26-pound cat, I think. I mean, he had the frame. He was big, framey cat. But it was awesome, man. I mean, we're talking 3 unforgettable experiences back to back. Just boom, boom, boom. And like Christian said, you call a cat. Anytime you call a cat, it gets you excited. Coyotes are exciting, you know, just because that's what you want to kill. You want to kill coyotes. Mm-hmm. And coyotes cause the most problems to everyday people, but cats and fox cause just as much problem.
I'd say calling a cat is exciting and nervous, though.
Yeah, no, it's like...
It's like nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's like a big deer.
Because you'll get a spot where you can shoot them, and then they'll slink right past that spot, and they'll get behind something where you can't shoot them, and they'll sit there, and they'll... You can play different switch sounds. Sometimes they'll come out, like, out of the brush from where they're sitting if they're enticed enough with the sound, but most of the time, they're just going to... They're going to freaking just set up shop and just watch.
Yep, they'll sit or...
Which, I mean, that's kind of why they're the apex predator. They don't come just hauling in there. They kind of evaluate the situation and make a plan.
Yeah.
I think I completely agree with Christian where it's nerve-wracking as the shooter to begin with. But one of the things that I think, and I've never experienced it because I haven't learned it yet, but I can't imagine how it is in your shoes to call them in because all of that responsibility to get that cat in...
I'm putting a lot of trust in y'all.
...is on you. And not only that is that... I mean, you're responsible for getting that cat from point A to point B, and that's probably a lot more pressure. We're just there just in case it does get close enough. You're there to cause the whole thing
and
from that.
Like Garrett was saying a minute ago about, you know, when they shoot something, my first question is it down? Luke Bryan, is it down? Is it down? That's me up on the rack. I swear to God. Quietly, is it down? But
I'm like, yeah, it's
down. You know, you shoot something. People that call understand these things, but... If you're running a light and you shoot something, unless you just hit them square in the chest and they drop right there, you're going to lose their eyes because they're going to either turn or they're going to roll or whatever.
Yeah.
If you miss, they're going to turn and run. If you hit them in the side, they're going to turn around. If, you know, if you hit them bad, they're going to run off. So you're going to lose their eyes. And with red light, you can't really see body just super, super well, especially if you don't have eyes to associate it with.
Yeah. A plus to that. Is you're running, we're all running suppressors now.
Yeah.
So you kind of know when you hit one good and you kind of know when you don't.
Yeah, you can hear impact.
If you hear it hit hard and it sounds like it hitting a hollow tree almost, you know that you hit it, you know, a good spot.
Yeah.
Most of the time. If you graze them, you know, you can hear that and you definitely can hear a noggin knock for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear the different sounds of impact, but yeah, you definitely can tell.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the coolest parts of it because, you know, when we started, none of us were suppressed. And then I forgot who got the first one.
Andy
got the first one. And it was almost like, what's the point in you being suppressed? Because none of us are. So it's, and then as soon as we reached that point where all of us were suppressed, it was like, oh,
that is,
if you're not suppressed, you're not coming.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, honestly, or you're going to shoot one of our guns. Yeah. And to be honest, that, you know, I've talked about a few things being game changers. The two things that have been the biggest game changer, I'm going to say 3 things that have been the biggest game changers. A, Lucky Duck Predator calls. I've ran Fox Pro, I've run Lucky Duck, I've ran Fox Pro and Lucky Duck side by side. Lucky Duck, and to me, is the better sounds. Now, the quality of certain things with the Lucky Duck versus a Fox Pro, I think Fox Pro has some better deals.
Yeah, there's pros and cons to everything.
Yeah.
But the pros outweigh the cons.
Yeah, but that's not a today topic is getting into all that, but Lucky Duck, number one, in my opinion. Number two, the rack. Number three, suppressors. Suppressors have totally changed the game for us. I mean, you're talking, you can kill doubles, triples, quads. Now, fox, it's not as big of a deal because you can shoot 6 fox shooting shotguns. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even
A shotgun's not as loud as a, like yeah, a 223 without a suppressor.
100%. And with brush and stuff, it muffles that shot too. But suppressed is a whole different game, and that's definitely upped the numbers, I think. I think it's helped a lot.
No, good. You're good.
Because, you know, we'll call something in, shoot it early in stand, just like this cat stand, exactly what we're talking about. Call in a cat early, shoot it, and I think Garrett said like 4 to 5 minutes. It was a little shorter than that. I only know because I'm running the call, so I see the times on the call.
Yeah.
But it was like 2 minutes, and boom, here he comes. So, I mean, had we been unsuppressed, he would have absolutely heard the shot. Now, cats, I've come to learn, they don't seem to mind it as much as like a coyote, but you can shoot multiple coyotes suppressed. We shot a coyote in that Hamilton tournament after we shot two fox. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
I mean, that's a big deal, and they made a big difference. But it kind of got off track there. Anyways, Garrett, go ahead. What were you
saying? No, I was just going to add on to that. I think on top of that, the fourth thing was not going fully thermal where everybody has it, because, like you said, there's advantages and disadvantages. But I know there are several of those locations where, especially when they disappear behind brush, where you lose those eyes, and before we had any thermal of any kind, whether the monocular or on the gun, you didn't know if as soon as you lost those eyes, if that cat turned and went or back the other way or kept going. And I know it's made it a lot easier to where we can scan and, oh, it's, you know, it's coming over here. Shine the light here, because it's about to show up right here. So that's helped a lot too, but not going fully, because there's been a lot of eyes that y'all see before we've ever even seen the thermal.
Yeah. I mean, like, that stands a prime example. That first cat, Christian caught the eyes first.
Yep.
And we're running multiple lights. Like I said, Christian's running Scan Pro. I'm running Scan Pro. We got lights on the rack. And then we're running two different thermals. Christian was the first one to catch him. And then I caught him. And that was before Garrett or Cole even seen him with thermal. We both caught eyes. Now, the next cat, they caught on thermal because he's 800. I mean, he was out there. And then we caught eyes at like 500 yards finally. I say finally, it was a matter of, you know, 30, 40 seconds because he was coming so hard. But, pretty crazy to me. You can bring the way we brought cats in that weekend, you know, 600, 800 yards. I mean, in, you know, a minute and a half. That's insane. People that call and understand how cats work, it's crazy. And, you know, some nights it's just like that, or some specific instances it's like that. But to do it two stands, three cats back to back. I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy to say, for you to say that time, because honestly, until you just said it, I didn't think about it. Because when we were watching that cat, it feels like when I think back, I'm like, oh yeah, that cat was coming in for, it was on a dead line, but it was like 5 minutes, and mm-hmm. you're probably watching the clock, and oh, that's 30 seconds. He's here.
Yep.
That's how it feels when you shoot too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like
when you get on an animal and you pull the trigger, you feel like you took 3 seconds, you look back and it took you half a second, and you're like, daggum.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the rest of the night, we'll kind of transition. The rest of the night, you know, we called stuff in here and there. I think we ended up killing some coons. We called a couple coyotes, missed some opportunities on coyotes. We called a coyote that we swore was a cat, and then Garrett let one rip at like 400 yards on him and shot over him somehow.
It's not somehow.
Garrett had his ballistics in wrong.
So that's the only other memorable thing I think that I contributed to that night was a little bit of wild shooting. Yeah. So I got that Rico hybrid shoot 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the
Garrett is a... Look, Garrett is a trial by fire type of individual,
yeah,
which is not the best thing during tournaments. And we've tried to get him a little better at it, and I think he's getting a little better at it. But
I could say I was the same way, though.
Yeah, you get something new, or, you know, you want to try it. And it's hard to just try stuff.
You learn real quick what you don't like.
There was that one, the only moment that I remember is, obviously, he already summarized it. I went into the ballistics chart for 6.5, did everything through there, put it in inches drop instead of MOA, and... So the first time I got to take a crack shot, I've got it at 400. We've got it ranged. There's a coyote. And I shot, and sure enough, I see the bullet hit probably about 3 or 4 feet on top of him. And like I said, like he said, this is all me, because they've put a lot more work into this and a lot more skill into this. I'm more of that plug-and-play kind of addition.
He's getting there. So we rounded out the night. I mean, we called in a few coyotes. We actually called in a fourth cat earlier in the night that we didn't talk about, that we just didn't get a good shot on. And, you know, we took a shot, probably wasn't the highest percentage shot, but we took a shot trying to kill him, missed him. It happens. And then, so like I said, called in a few coyotes later in the night. The one Garrett took a shot on, just so happened didn't get him. And then killed a couple coons. But we ended the night, we had a couple fox, we had three cats, that one coyote, and a couple of coons. No?
No coons.
No.
Oh, we only killed those coons shot in one Hamilton. Coon.
Yeah.
Yeah, we only shot one coon, and it has three legs.
What?
The one that Garrett shot.
Oh, the one. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, man, we've been doing so much hunting, getting things.
We shot at a coon. But
Garrett did shoot a coon at about 10 feet, and he hit him, but we did not find him. 6'5", no worky at 10 yards, apparently.
6'5", does worky, but we saw that it was crawling away, and we knew that it had died. We saw it there, but at that point in the tournament, we're blowing and going, essentially, and it couldn't get to him. He was too back into that thicket.
Yeah, we were in a hurry. But, so we ended the night. I mean, we had some other coyotes we called in and we probably could have shot at, but I'm more, like I said, I'm about taking the high percentage shots and stuff. I mean, there was one stand, me and Christian couldn't see him. I had Garrett's thermal because he was taking a nap. But I was working coyotes, you know. I think we called like probably five coyotes that stand, but nothing wanted to commit past like 400 yards. But they had seen us come in. Yeah. And it was real windy. We weren't set up very well.
They'd also been called. So.
Yeah, they'd been called. I mean, it was right off a county road where people could just whip in there and call. And that guy apparently gives a lot of permission to multiple people. So they, you know, they were pretty educated. They were interested, but they weren't committing past 400. And
mm-hmm.
With a gun I wasn't familiar with, not knowing all that, no. I wasn't going to just start shooting.
Yeah, no.
Yep. But there's a couple other instances. You know, we called a few more, too. Didn't get – just things didn't work out. End of the night, like I said, three coyotes, three cats, one coyote, two fox. We felt pretty confident. If we hadn't had the cats, I would have been like, no, we don't even have a chance.
Yeah.
But knowing we had those cats and the points that those cats brought, I was like, let's go to weigh in. You know, it's worthwhile. So we went and grabbed some breakfast, went to the weigh in, and we were one of the earlier teams, and we knew we had a big cat too. For the area, so we knew we were going to compete in that. Our coyote was pretty good, but mm-hmm. he wasn't huge. You know, normally you need like a 40-pound coyote to be up there, and he was like mid-30s, I think.
34, yeah. Something like that.
Which is a big coyote, but in a tournament that's not nothing crazy. Anyway, so go to the weigh-in. We weigh in, and there was already a few cats weighed, and we were leading by like 8 pounds?
6 pounds.
Yeah, it was something.
I think 15 it was something comfortable. The lowest.
And like I said, this cat, he's empty now. He was a lot bigger when we shot him. So he was 25-pound cat, I would say probably pretty easily. But still big enough to compete. So we sit there and, you know, we're all hanging out, people coming around the weigh-in. And what was really cool about this tournament, too, they had a fur buyer there that was buying coyotes, cats, you know, all that directly from hunters, yep. Which I think is a good thing, because a very common thing you'll see in tournaments is people dumping animals. Most people cut a dead pit or something to throw stuff in, or throw them in your pasture, whatever, or skin them out. But you'll see it a lot, people dump an animal or dump piles of animals on the side of the road, and it's kind of a big no-no. That being said, I think it's cool. There's a few tournaments I've started implementing stuff like fur buyers, or they'll have haul-off services. You weigh your animal in, they take it. It's now property of the tournament, unless you just have something special that you're wanting to keep. Which, fur buyer's running around, he's buying up animals left and right. He keeps coming back to us, clearly, because we have three cats to start with. And Garrett's got a black coyote.
And the fox.
And fox, because we had grays, and they don't have grays up there, really.
Yeah, I think there's only one other gray that was weighed there.
Yeah. There was a handful of reds weighed, and but really, I mean, there wasn't many fox at all. But y'all want to kind of talk a little bit about the weigh-in? What y'all thought?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty nicely set up. Kind of just pull in. The guys are already waving you down with the tripod set up with the winch on it and all that good stuff. So everything's kind of already set up there. Just pull up, pull your stuff out. They count them up. They put your name down, put what you got. It was a real professional setup.
Yeah.
Really. Because some of these, you never know what people are going to do, and they could just be jacking around in their truck, pulling stuff out that ain't theirs, whatever. You know, you see all kinds of stuff, but they had it set up to where you, like, right when you pulled in, you weighed in or they counted you up or whatever.
They're checking your animals as you pull in, weigh in, yeah, and counting your totals, too.
And they had a polygraph, so that was good.
Yeah.
I know that not a lot of tournaments will say that they'll do a polygraph just to kind of make sure people do right. And we always do right, so it's never really a problem. But they actually did have a polygraph, which is kind of cool to experience that for the first
time. Yeah, honestly. So, you know, if you get called for the polygraph, that means you're doing something good to start with, which we got called for polygraph. And even doing everything right, like, I was nervous.
Yep.
I'm standing there.
I was about to say that.
I'm like, I hope they don't pick me, because if I say something wrong, like, I know we did everything right. We didn't do anything wrong.
And they were making it, like, nerve-wracking almost. Yeah, they were, like, walking up, like, kind of looking sideways, and then they would point and like, you go. Like,
all right. And then, so of course they picked Cole out of all four of us, which honestly, thankfully they picked Cole. And I mean, they'd already sent, it took them a while. I don't know if they were still setting stuff up or what,
yeah,
but they took the three top teams up there, three guys,
mm-hmm,
and we're standing there and they go through all of the door prizes. And Cole is still, and they had a lot of door prizes, by the way.
Yeah. Lot.
Cole is still in there.
Ends up winning one of the door prizes when he's not even there.
Yep. We're still standing there. They bring out the other two guys that had already done theirs. They're done. They'd been there for a few minutes, too. They were there long enough that they were able to collect their checks, take their photos, all that stuff. And we're just standing there. Everybody leaves. We're still standing there, and we're kind of looking at each other like,
I kind of felt like we were a nuisance at that point. I was sitting there, like, tying everybody up, because everybody's left besides the people who have hosted it, and they're sitting there twiddling their thumbs like, are these people going to be done yet? Are we going to be able to go home?
Mm-hmm.
And then, finally, here comes Cole, and we're like, we're feeling a little nervous, because you never know what Cole might say, and he comes out. They give us the green light, you know. Again, we didn't do anything.
We did anything wrong.
No, we didn't do anything wrong. But not knowing how a polygraph works or anything, you know, and I've heard they're very unreliable. The slightest thing.
You just have somebody that's nervous and,
yeah,
you know, they think they're lying just because they're nervous and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that they get it one, like, super, super precise, but I doubt there's a whole lot of tournaments that have, like, 5-star rated polygraphers, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're just
super polygraph.
I have a polygraph machine. I know I can look at the little lines. Like, that's all they're kind of basing it off of,
I guess.
See, the biggest thing I was worried about when Cole was the one that selected was that they would take that heart murmur or whatever from drinking too many Red Bulls. Because from that night on, Cole had, I think, consumed four
EKG.
Or five Red Bulls and five of those little 5-hour energies, and I'm like, they're not going to be able to tell if he's lying or not, because his heartbeat's going to be off the chart to begin with. Like, everything's going to be reading.
Probably Cole might be dead. They're reading his heart rate.
Flat line on the
polygraph.
They're
like, sir, are you okay? You sure?
Heart rate's a little high. I'm chill. But he came out. Everything was good. We ended up third in the points. Team hunted West Texas, and they came in with like 11. No, they had 16, right? Coyotes?
Yeah, it was
a lot. Yeah,
good amount.
And it, like I said, it was a windy night. It was tough to call coyotes that night. So they did really good. And then the next team above us, they won by like, they beat us by like, if we had one 75 more.
75 points.
Yeah, the Fox were worth, no, coyotes were worth 75. Yeah. If we'd have had one more Fox and that coon, or both Fox that we didn't kill,
yeah,
we would have been second. But a lot of things happened. You know, we had a whole other cat that we could have killed that, or another coyote or any, you know, a lot of different plug and play situations, and we would have been second. But is what it is. We ended up third, and we had Big Cat, which was cool, and we won Big Cat like pretty handedly, I think by like 5 or 6 pounds. We led it the whole time, and, you know, nobody got close to it. I mean, I thought that was pretty impressive. And that spoke a lot to what we were calling, you know, calling good ground, killing bigger animals for the area we're in and stuff, killing older animals. That coyote we killed, he wasn't no young coyote. He was a big, furred up male.
Yeah.
And calling a male during breeding season, we called multiples, like I said, called multiple coyotes, only killed that one. But calling a big male like that during breeding season, pretty cool, especially on prey. But it was a great tournament overall, I thought. I mean, I had a great time. One of the most memorable tournaments for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was nice to go through all of that and, you know, make those memories with not only the animals that we got away with, but also the way that they came in. Yeah. That was memorable.
Yeah, and getting to spend time, you know, like I said, the team always rotates, but getting to spend time with these guys and Cole. You know, Cole's been a big part of mine and Christian's life the past year and a half, I would say, and I think we're just as much a part of his life, and he's definitely one of our really good buddies now, and I think it was real good for Cole, and I think he had a good time. I'd have loved to have him here, but, you know, 2 hours apart, it's kind of hard to line things up on a weekday.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But
I think overall there was only one thing I would have changed about that tournament. I wish they would have given away 4 belt buckles instead of 2. Because walking away from that tournament and, you know, drawing straws in the truck on who's going to take home the 2 belt buckles. And, I mean, they were awesome. They looked amazing. I mean, that bingo, one right bingo. There, it was an amazing experience. And it was fun to have actually something in your hand, whether it's, you know, whether one of us or two of us is holding on to it for the rest of their life.
Yep.
But it's something that says, hey, we were there. I mean, Garrett, obviously I get to mount the black coyote, so I have something there the whole time, so I'm not worried about it, but I would like 4.
If you get a little lonely, I'll rent it out to you. But yeah, we won those buckles, which was cool. It was odd that they only had 2 per category, but I'm not complaining.
No.
We made a little wheel and put everybody's names in it and made it, you know, as fair as we could on it. We tried to make it, you know, work out, and then for once, I had the lucky straw, and Cole drew well, so we both got the buckles. But did tell the guys, you know, next go around, if we win and it's only 2 buckles handed out, they get the next 2.
Then we get the prize money.
I don't know about that part.
Next time we'll do that. We'll, you know, 2 of us take home the buckles.
No.
2 of us take home the prize money. That's what it should have been.
I think we'll still split that all either. I'll cut that buckle in half if you want. Which end do you want?
What way are you going to cut it?
That's what I'm
probably
asking.
Probably the back end.
Right in the middle.
You could split it right down the center horizontally, gosh, and it might still work.
Right down the seam.
Yeah. Nothing better than that. Anyways.
Little slit.
Oh, gosh.
I think that's probably getting close to wrapping this one up, but it was a heck of a time. You know, we're still out hunting. We got one this weekend, and then we got Big Cat and Big Gray the following weekend. We got some really cool stuff lined up for that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably going to have Garrett back on for another episode to talk about last weekend's hunt. We're just kind of doing these as we go, same way we've been doing it, and the same way we're going to keep doing it.
But yep.
Garrett, you got anything else you want to say to these guys?
No.
Golly.
Well.
Christian?
Yeah, just make sure y'all like, comment, subscribe.
Don't forget, check out Texas Cash. And make sure to use our promo code with Dancing Dogs.
Native 15, all caps. That'll get you 15% off your order. And make sure y'all keep living your hobbies.
We'll see y'all later.